Dot, do you mean a religious service?
Dot, yes, something of the kind.
Dot, oh, no.
What we do is to send to that higher realm I mentioned, where someone receives our message. After that, all we know is that there is a rapid descent of the power we ask for. Of course, originally, it comes from the source, but it is passed on to us from another personage. It is a natural process and procedure, and the fact that we have created the flower or plant is sufficient. Our desire for its complete inhumation is fulfilled, our request is answered without fail, and without question. We shouldn't ask for it for an inferior article, though we could have it even for that, but our natural pride wouldn't allow us to do so. At first I examine all my pupils' work. If any slight modification or improvement is needed, that can be done, but if it's too bad for improvement, then it's started anew, and the misformed work is discarded. It's very simple when once you are in the running of it, so to speak. As with many other things, it's a new know-how. I shouldn't like to say that at least as far as I am concerned. I said. I am convinced I should turn out a flower such as had never been seen before, and was never likely to be seen again. Oh, come now, Monsignor. Would you like to try for yourself? Indeed, I should not. I should be far too nervous, especially with the three of you gazing at me and waiting for trouble. They laughed at my frank expression of plain cowardice. As a matter of practice, we don't go about it that way. Every new pupil retires with me into our little sanctum, where we make our experiments and first essays at creation in seclusion. So there's no embarrassment at all. Of course, my dear friend, I know that, but all the same I don't somehow think I should make a great success of it. I affirmed. Would there be, do you think, a vacancy of any sort for another learner? Asked Roger. Because, if so, I should very much like to become one, said the gardener, finishing Roger's sentence for him. There's plenty of room, and Tosper. But before we go into that, let me finish off this tulip. It won't take a moment. So, he held the tulip in his hand, and instantly we saw a flash of light descend upon it. It came and was ended almost before you realized it. Now, said he, we have something very different. Smell. He gently waved the flower to and fro for us, and we were at once aware of the most subtle perfume. Place your hands round the bloom, friend Roger. Roger did so. Why? He said. It's alive. I can feel the dot. What is it? Sort of electricity running up my arms. No, it's not electricity, but it is power. That is actually the life you feel, and it's passing some on to you, for your benefit. We not finished yet. Put the pot on the table, then take hold of the stem of the plant, and give it a little shake, as though you were trying to shake a drop of water off the petals. That's the way. As Roger performed this simple action, a most perfect sound issued forth, as of the striking of a small silvery bell, of clear and sweet tone. 36. He repeated the experiment over and over again, such was his surprised delight. Do all the flowers make that sound when this is done to them? He asked. All the flowers, and many other things beside. The water, for instance. You can bring out some lovely sounds from that when it is disturbed. But before the tulip was given life, it was silent. Well, now, you would like to join us. We shall be delighted to have you whenever you feel disposed. Oh, come. Ruth and Monsignor are showing you round for the present. There's plenty of time. See the world. Our world. First, eh, Monsignor? That is so, Roger. I said. Do you feel you want to start here immediately? Oh, no, not this instant. Good, then we can continue our perambulations, and see some more, and then our friend will be happy to make you one of his pupils. I can give you any details that you might want to know, without taking up too much of our friend's time. And so that matter was pleasantly settled, and another happy soul made happier still. 11. The man in the cottage. You mentioned other places, Monsignor, remarked Roger. Places that are not pleasant, as these are. That is so, Roger, I replied. Where are they? As to their precise location, well, that is not so easy defined. As I expect you've noticed, the four points of compass have no significance in these realms or anywhere else in the spirit world. That, as you will remember, was matter that might have cropped up when you once asked if were possible to lose one's self here. Still, we could soon take you to those unpleasant places. Do you really wish to see them? The boy was silent for a moment. Perhaps I had better guided by Ruth and yourself, I mean, guided by our advice. Then, my dear boy, if you wish for our suggestions, sure Ruth will agree with me that it were much better that you keep away from the dark regions for some time yet. Monsignor is perfectly right, Roger. Tigotha. You know we will do anything for you that we possibly can, those beastly regions are not for you yet. Later on, perhaps. Accept our word for it, there are thousands who could corroborate us that you wouldn't feel at all happy about it afterwards. You know how, on Earth, deep curiosity will lead us towards looking at something or other we were pretty sure we should afterwards regret having seen. We would then, and our first impressions become verified. Here's just such another instance. This can be said, Roger. Those dark realms are not the theological hell to which people are condemned for all eternity. Once in, never out again. Every person, who at present is an inhabitant of those terrible places, has the free choice to emerge from them whenever he changes his mind. He can work his way out in precisely the same way as we can work our way from these lovely lands into still lovelier. The law is the same there as here, and applies to us all. There and here. And here is a living witness, Tohat, I say. Do you see that trim cottage over there, Roger, with the two tall trees near it? Well, I am revealing no secrets when I tell you that the dweller in that cottage once lived in an awful hovel, not actually in the dark rooms, but in the dismal, bleak regions that lie close to them. The sort of twilight of the dark lands themselves. Ah, our friend has seen us. We had perceived the owner of the cottage sitting in his garden, and now he was waving to us. Shall we take Roger to see him, Monsignor? Ruth suggested. That would be a capital notion, my dear, if Roger doesn't mind listening to our friend's story. It's not a long one, nor is it frightening or anything of that sort. But I must tell you this, that it was largely due to Ruth that he was able to turn the corner, as it were, and emerge from his unhappiness. So you can readily imagine that he regards Ruth as something only very slightly less than an archangel. Ruth laughed. Well, said Roger. I think that the gentleman is entirely right. He's a very good judge, anyway. I can easily understand how he feels, for both of you have done so much for me already, even in this short period. 37. No, my boy. We've done nothing that millions of sea would not have done. But we must spare Ruth's blushes. I'll tell you what, Roger. If you feel like listening a friend's story, you will be doing him a very good turn. B. He feels that he owes so much for the help he's been that he can do enough in return, and telling others about rehabilitation, he believes, is some small way of showing gratitude. Bless him, his heart's in the right place, and find he doesn't despair himself, either. I thought for a moment you were going to say, despair the horses. Roger. How could you? Exclaimed Ruth. If Morn ever puts that down on paper and he's liable to what I some of the earth folk say. Trivial rubbish, my dear, all of it. I said. I hop one d think, Roger, from what I've said about a friend that he's a trying old bore. Far from it. but in this case IU.LL find his simple story will answer a number of questions for you without your having to ask them. And if I didn't know otherwise I should say that will give you a great deal of bother, one way and another. Said with a grin. Glorious, Roger, that's a good one against Monsignor Ruth. He included you in that statement, Ruth. IP out. By this time we were within hailing distance of our and he came rapidly towards us. Ruth, Monsignor. He cried with evident delight, a pleasure. It seems a long time since I saw you both. Who is our young friend? I've not had the pleasure of him before. We introduced Roger, and explained that one of the reasons why we had not seen him of late was that we were showing Roger round his new land. How are you? Asked Truth. Why, my dear, I never felt better in my life. Is it possible, do you think, for us ever to feel better than we do now? That's something I should very much like to know as well, sir. Said Roger. There you are, my dear. Here's this young gentleman firmly supports me in my demand. Now then, what does that wise head say? Our friend slipped his arm through Roger's. Why, I don't know. Ruth answered with a smile. But I don't see how we could feel any better than we do already. Perhaps it's all a matter of comparison. That must be it, and compared with what I once felt, this is perfection. It might be called paradise regained, if I were at all sure that I ever had it to lose and regain. But come inside, and let our new friend see what a spirit world country cottage looks like. This small dwelling was as neat and trim inside as it was outside, and everything was arranged with the greatest taste and refinement, and with yet a nigh upon solid comfort and enjoyment. In the apartment which we entered directly from the garden, the furniture was of the ancient style, well constructed and pleasant to behold. It was kept in a high state of polish, and reflected the large bowls of flowers that were everywhere displayed. The other rooms, both upstairs and down, were similarly appointed, and altogether the whole dwelling revealed the natural pride and devoted care of its owner. I have no shame in telling you, Roger, my friend, that this is a very different place from the one inhabited when I first came into the spirit world, as Ruth and Monsignor will tell you, and, of course, Edwin. Where is Edwin, now? Why isn't he with you? He has been very busy of late. Ruth replied. And none of us has seen much of him beyond a fleeting visit. Roger was one of our own cases. Do you like being referred to as a case, Roger? And we thought we would take time off and show him things. Doing for him what Edwin did for you and Monsignor. Do you remember your first visit to me? But of course you do. I shall never forget it. If you feel so disposed, tell Roger about it. Our friend reflected for a moment. Why, yes, if you wish. He said. But he should know first how I came to live in such a place, such an awful place, as it was. When I lived on Earth, Roger, I was a successful businessman. Business was my preoccupation in life, for I thought of precious little else, and I considered all means right in my dealings with others, provided such means were strictly legal. As long as they were that, I deemed the rest did not matter. I was ruthless, therefore, in gaining my ends, and coupled with a high degree of efficiency, I achieved great commercial success. In my home, there was only one person to be thought of, and that was myself. The rest of the family died as they were told, and I did the telling. 38. I always gave generously to charity when I thought I should derive the greatest benefit and credit for myself, for I did not believe in anonymity as far as I was concerned. If any donations were to be given, I saw to it that my name was sufficiently prominent. Of course, I supported the church in the district where I lived, and at my own expense had some portions added to the building, with proper emphasis upon Vedna. The house I occupied was my own, and of such size and always have the last word, so to speak. has simply marched out of the house and left me when I became too intractable. At length he returned, but this time not alone, for he brought with him two friends, and another whom I had sometimes seen in the area, the same two friends who are looking after you, Roger. Monsignor and Ruth. Glancing back now, I know that visit was the turning point. Ruth and Monsignor stood in my room, very discreetly in the background, while Edwin spoke to me. I began to feel a trifle less angry, and my eyes were continually drawn towards Ruth, when I had first glimmerings of light, if I may so express it. Ruth's presence served to remind me that I had a daughter of my own, though I had treated her equally abominably with the rest. There was no physical resemblance between Ruth and my daughter, it was more one of temperament, as far as I could judge. Whatever it was, I already began to feel differently. That, combined with all that Edwin had spoken to me on so many occasions, had its effect. After my visitors had gone, a terrible loneliness came over me, as well as deep, dark remorse, so intense that I cried aloud in my despair for Edwin's presence now, which I had so often spurned with contempt, for I had put in some good thinking. You can imagine my joy and surprise when I perceived Edwin coming towards the house almost upon the instant of my cry. I met him at the door, and as he would tell you himself, I was a changed man. The first thing I did was to thank him for coming so expeditiously. And I was not much accustomed to thanking people for anything. The next was to apologize to him for all I had said and done to him. But he waved my words aside with a brilliant smile upon his face that clearly bespoke his great pleasure that, at last, I was on the way to being something very different from the inflated egoist and spiritual blackguard that I was when I arrived in the spirit lands. Edwin at once sat down with me and proceeded to discuss ways and means of getting me out of the hellhole that was my abode. A course of action was decided upon. Edwin did the deciding, for I put myself entirely in his hands, and for the present it was arranged that I should remain where I was for a brief while, and that I had but to call him and he would come. After he had gone, I gazed round upon my house, and in some extraordinary manner it seemed much brighter than it was. It was unquestionably less dingy, and my clothes were less shabby, and that discovery helped to make me feel a great deal happier. I will not bore you with all the struggles, hard struggles, I had to make up for all that was past. It was hard work, but I never lacked friends. I don't need to look farther than this room to see to, at least. Well, Roger, you see me now, as unlike my old self as day is to night, still working hard, and glad of it. My work? Why, doing for others what Edwin did for me. And for the same kind of people. It's easier to handle them when you've been one of them yourself. Our host added with a chuckle. There's one consolation. He went on. They'd be pretty well forgotten about me on Earth. Otherwise they'd think of me as being far worse than old Scrooge. And would point out that, at the last, Scrooge reformed and became a decent citizen, while I went to my end unrepentant. Perfectly true. But they know that he'd changed my views somewhat since then, and they'd not know me for the man I was. Still, maybe they'll find out one day, and, my word, there'll be surprises all round. 12. Philosophers. Folly. Would you, Roger, describe these realms of the spirit world as a dreary imitation of the earth? I asked our young friend. Good gracious. No. Whoever said they were? 39. The particular gentleman I have in mind, though not the only one of his kind, lives on earth, and is regarded by his friends, and one or two people who make money out of him, as a philosopher. The truth is that he knows a little about something and never hesitates to say a great deal about everything. His friends and admirers naturally consider him a perfect oracle, and pause upon his every word. I believe that is the expression. He is always ready with pontifical declarations upon every subject on earth. Sooner or later a subject not on earth is bound to crop up. Somebody will ask him if he believes in a hereafter, and if so, what manner of place does he think it to be? That is the moment when the trouble begins. The great philosopher. And there are many whose title is accorded them upon the flimsiest grounds. Knows nothing about the matter whatever, but that is no hindrance, and so he refers to literature dealing with the subject which he has never read, but has only heard about very sketchily. One of his most fatuous utterances is embodied in the question I put to you a moment ago, that the spirit world is a dreary imitation of the earth, which in his estimation, is a vastly superior place in which to live. Another objection which he raises concerns the quality and substance of the spiritual teachings that are sent to the earth from time to time. Do you remember that scriptural text, Roger, about loving one another? Good sound stuff that, eh? Yes. I heard sermons on the text, sometimes, when went to church. Which, I believe, was not very often. I am referring to the church going, not to the sermons on the text. Roger and Ruth both laughed. I wit and humor may not be of a high, scintillating order, but then, it innit meant to be. Among ourselves we utter the same kind of pleasantries such as would be, and are, customary among friends in their own domestic circles on earth. And, I would have you know, we like to have our domestic circles here in these lands of the spirit world. We prefer to retain our mild jokes, however small they may be judged to be. Humor is the essence of this life. We take pleasure in making our friends and companions smile, as we ourselves are pleasured at their sallies. In other words, we are human, despite earthly ideas to the contrary. Doubtless much of what I am here setting down for you will be regarded as trivial rubbish. At least there is this to be said for it, it is not nearly as trivial or such rubbish as most the grandiose utterances of earthly philosophers when they give their opinions of the spirit world and of us who live in it. What those same gentry think about affairs when they themselves come to live here, is an other thing altogether. Now, Roger, when you heard those sermons on brother love, you thought it was good sound teaching, and beyond dispute, didn't you? Yes, certainly. And you were right. The original precept came from a man who knew what he was talking about. And our great philosopher would have been in complete agreement with the preacher in this case, that brother love is essential, and so on. It is essential, and spirit teachers have harped upon that theme. Time out of mind, and they will continue to do so, as long as there is an earth world to speak to. But what do you suppose is the comment upon such spirit world teachings when considered by at least one of these renowned philosophic gentlemen? This. Frowsy religious uplift. Elegant, isn't it? Can you observe the stupendous mind at work? The person preaches brotherly love to him from his pulpit, and he is suitably impressed and in full agreement. The spirit teacher tells him about it, and it becomes frowsy uplift. Monsignor feels rather keenly on the subject, Roger. Observed Ruth. As we all do here, because sooner or later one of these gentlemen is bound to come our way, and that means hard work, and very tedious work for whoever is deputed to look after him. You see, Roger, the trouble is not alone with these gentry themselves. Their pernicious views are read and absorbed by their rather tattered following, and treated as profound truths, so that if nothing intervenes in the meantime to make them alter their opinions, there will be others arriving here in a similar state of ignorance. In other words, said Roger, the mistakes of the earth have to be put right here. That's exactly it. In your own case, it was an absolute holiday for Ruth and me. What so complicates individual instances is where the new arrival knows nothing about this life, but has wrong ideas about it. You knew nothing, and fortunately had no ideas at all. I say that in derogation. You know that, my dear fellow. What you did have was a dear mind, free of all silly notions, even to the extent of harps and wings. One of the most senseless charges brought by these learned gentry is that all the communicators from the spirit world are English, so that, in effect, the spirit world is wholly English, to the total exclusion of Alotha nations. 40. People of other countries might say the same. Exactly. The Frenchman, for instance, might say that the whole spirit world seems to be French because in France all the spirit communicators are French. The very same thing could be said throughout the whole Earth world. Can you imagine what would happen if a company of these highly intelligent and skeptical philosophers were to meet, one from every nation? They would each be in somewhat of a difficulty. Forch would wish to establish his country's claims upon patriotic grounds, so to speak, but at the same time would lodge the complaint that the spirit world seemed to belong to his country alone. The proceedings would possibly have that familiar appearance to be observed in international conferences for the preservation of peace. I suppose people of other nations die in the same way that we've done. You suppose very rightly, my boy. A statement of the obvious, but not so obvious that our philosophic sages are able to perceive it. Is this part of the spirit world English, then? What would you think purely from appearances? I should say, subject to the differences between this world and the earth, that there is a most decided leaning towards the old home landscape. There is, and the houses bear a resemblance as well. We've not travelled very far afield as yet. So far you've not seen hills of any great height, nor have you seen mountains. But they are here. As to the people, whom have you met so far? Well, the S. Ruth and yourself, and you have spoken of Edwin. All three of us English like yourself. Then there is Radiant Wing, and Omar and his friend. Exactly. The first, an American Indian, the second, Indian, and the third, Egyptian. That is almost international in itself. You left out our cottage friend. He's another Englishman. The question is, among what nation did you or would you expect to find yourself after leaving the earth? Why, it has never occurred to me. Among English people, I suppose. Do you speak any other languages than your own? Not one. A smattering of school Latin, perhaps. It would have been decidedly awkward for you if you had awakened to find yourself among the Chinese, for instance. Probably scared the life out of me. Dear me, why? The Chinese are delightful people, kind and thoughtful, and always ready to help. You see, my dear fellow, that what you say points the stupidity of these philosopher gentlemen in their false notions that the spirit world must be an exclusively English one. There isn't one of them who would not feel much the same about it as you have this minute described. Ruth and I have met some of them, and they were profoundly glad to hear their own tongue, the English tongue, spoken in the same way as we spoke to you. And the same thing applies to the Frenchman, and the Chinaman, and all the rest. As you know, personal communication by the thought process obviates any difficulty in the language question. That process is without nationality. But when folks are awakening in these lands they use their vocal organs, and so do we. That's natural. What were your own impressions when you opened your eyes in our room beside the open window? Well, I certainly had an at-home sort of feeling. The room was the kind I was familiar with, and the through the window was most certainly familiar too. Precisely. That's as it should be. So you see, the .s law and reason behind all this, and nothing that the .wise folk of the earth can say or think will alter it. Then the other nations must be living somewhere else. The .s a foolish thing to say. Of course they must. They are, Roger. Every nation on earth had some position and location in the spirit world. People like to be among their own kind, and there .s no reason why they should not be. Would it be right, do you think, or good policy, to force people of one particular nation or national temperament upon that of another? Not at first, at any rate. Then, as to the country itself. Nations prefer their own type of country, however delightful that of others may be. Here, they can find it. And that's right and natural too. What about Omar and his friend?